Joining me this morning by phone is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, who represents Arkansas's 1st Congressional District. Good morning.
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Doing well. We've been talking, of course, for a long time about the need for a new farm bill, and the Senate had passed its version of a new farm bill, but the House was deadlocked, mainly over funding for the SNAP program, which makes up a huge part of the bill. So, as I understand it, the House Republicans, no Democrats, Republican votes passed the farm provisions without including the food stamp funding part of the bill. Of course, this made a lot of people angry. Was it a bad move, or what do you think?
Well, I think what had people concerned was that, you know, historically the two bills have been, the bill has been two specific titles, you know, nutrition title and the commodity title, and one was there to leverage the other, if you will. And that is to say that, you know, we have such a geographic divide. This bill is largely a geographic dynamic as much as it is political. And so the two portions of the bill being coupled sort of made sure that we could pass the whole thing. And this time around, I think there was a different approach. You know, the bill that we passed out of the House, and I want to clarify, too, because there may have been some that thought that we were considering the Senate bill, and that's not accurate. We've never considered the Senate bill in the House. So the bill that the Senate passed was never sent to us for consideration. What we were voting on in June was the House bill that was passed out of committee on a 36-10 vote. So a real good bipartisan feel going into the floor debate. And then on the floor, where we kind of lost control of it was with the amendments on the nutrition title. And the final amendment offered, I think, was ultimately what lost the bipartisan support. I think that, you know, probably went a little too far in one of the amendments there, and so we lost a significant number of Democrats that would have been enough to take it over the finish line. And so in failing to pass the overall bill, the leadership decided, well, we'll just take this one piece at a time, and brought the commodity title to the floor first, and primarily because the clock is ticking on the commodity title. If we're not able to pass that by September 30th, then our farm programs are threatened. Now, I would say this, that September 30th is the deadline for the farm bill, but as far as the nutrition portion of the farm bill, that's unaffected. It's also exempt from sequester. So the whole point in why we wanted to advance the nutrition title in tandem with the commodity title is because there were significant reforms. The cuts were only about, 2.5% of total for authorization for the nutrition title, but the reforms were significant that would have really made a huge difference in the future, in the out years, that would have really helped streamline the program and be a much more efficient application and administration of taxpayer dollars. So, you know, it's unfortunate that it took place that way. I certainly did not want to see it happen that way, but this was the route that leadership chose. It's actually the same farm bill, less the nutrition title. So it was the commodity title that was put forth as the farm bill just last week, with one exception, and that was to repeal the permanent law, the 1949 law, and replace it with the current law on passage. So basically what this farm bill would then become is the permanent law. So we wouldn't have the 1949 law to fall back on. And there are some that didn't like that approach because they felt like the 1949 law was the hammer that drives a new farm bill. So it was leveraged to make sure that we actually did engage in marking up a new farm bill, because nobody wants to go back to the 1949 law. And so the idea is that, well, it's so bad, there's no way we could work it, manage it, so, you know, in the end, you know, we're always going to pass a farm bill. Well, I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but it was, I guess, comforting to some to think that we had that as sort of a leverage to make sure that we always pass a farm bill every year.
Well, so what happens next? You know, eventually you do have to conference, I assume, with the Senate bill. How will that work? Can what the House passed still be conferenced with the Senate bill?
Well, what will happen is, you know, we passed the commodity title will go in. Chairman Lucas has committed on the House floor that we're going to pass a nutrition title as well, and they'll merge the two. They will be passed separately, but then they'll be merged as one bill, and they can then be conferenced. It can be conferenced with the Senate. And so that's the game plan at this point going forward.
Well, the way a lot of people are looking at this, of course, Democrats and others opposed to the Republican Party often argue that Republicans don't care about poor people. Does this vote add fuel to that argument?
No, not at all. In fact, I mean that's kind of the standard attack from the other side. And in fact, what we've seen here with this approach in terms of managing the nutrition title more efficiently. In fact, it was a bipartisan vote that was passed out of committee. It actually does more to protect people who are in need of this food safety net that these programs provide, because what it does is it closes the loopholes for exploitation. Because when you have people take advantage of these programs, what you're doing is you're taking people that may not need the help but are just availing themselves of it, which dilutes the resources that are designated to help people who really do need it. And so, you know, the reality is we have finite resources, and we have to make the best use of those resources. And that means when we have a food safety net that's targeted to people who are the most needy and that need the most help, we want to make sure that those resources actually go to those people and not to others who might take advantage of programs. And these reforms did that. They did it in a very responsible way. So I think that we really lost a great opportunity. And I would say this, that, you know, we had about 60 votes committed going into floor debate on the Democrat side. And when it was all said and done, we only got about 24. And so it's still, in spite of it, we still got, you know, a good number of votes from the other side. And my point in saying that is that, both sides recognize that we have finite resources and we have to do a better job of administering these programs to make sure that the help goes where it needs to go.
Many people are concerned now about what's in or on their food. There's a lot of concern about that in these days. There's legislation being proposed to require labeling of genetically engineered food. Should we be concerned about genetically engineered and modified crops? What are your feelings about this required labeling proposal?
Well, you know, innovation in agriculture is important. I mean, we've got to feed 300 million people here in the United States and billions more globally. And in fact, I think there are some projections that say we'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 billion people in about another 35 years or so. So, you know, we're obviously going to have to rely on technology. And what you see now is a very thorough and rigorous review process. Right now, it may take up to 10 years to get a product approved. And, you know, when we have people around the world that are struggling with hunger, and we could meet that demand and get these people fed, instead we've log-jammed the process with, you know, extremely, I think, overkill, if you will. I mean, you compare this to countries like Canada and Brazil, where they're able to advance this technology and more quickly and able to participate in the global marketplace. We're losing market share. And the longer we wait with respect to our biotech and our technology, the more market share we lose to foreign competition. And, yeah, that's not good for American farmers. And, you know, one of the things that we have as an example in Arkansas, as you know, is ground zero for Palmer pigweed or Palmer amaranth. And, you know, a whole lot of herbicides that are ready to treat the problem have been developed, but we're still waiting on the approval. That costs a lot of money, and ultimately that cost is borne out in the marketplace. And so what we really need to be doing is thinking about how do we protect consumers and streamline the process so we can get to the market quicker. And so there's really no science that offers any reason why genetically modified crops would have adverse effects. And so if you can't back up your assertions with science, I think we just need to go forward. And ultimately, this GMO labeling requirement is going to cost consumers more money.
We talked last month about the significant group of Arkansans who protested the designation of the White River as a national blue way. The designation was withdrawn, but I understand there have been some further developments. What's the latest, and remind us of what the nature of the opposition was to this designation?
Well, okay, let me just say that the designation was rescinded, but it was not permanently rescinded. So there's some cause for concern there. The program's been put on hold. Secretary Jewell made that announcement yesterday. She's the Secretary of the Interior. Basically, what we saw was what was perceived to be a federal overreach, where they developed a program. It was an administration program that was developed, and the Department of the Interior was to implement this multi-agency jurisdiction. And really not a whole lot of clarity as to what the program was, a great deal of ambiguity in the language, no clear objectives. So what are they trying to do? It appeared that they were just trying to inject more federal government, more federal control into our state, and adversely affecting potentially private landowners. And so what we saw was a lot of backlash. You know, the way the program was rolled out was there was no transparency. There was really no advance notice. There was no legislative oversight either in Washington or in the state of Arkansas. There was no, as I said, no public comment period, nothing. It was just here's this program. And so we saw significant reaction from county judges that were in the White River watershed that would have been affected, because of the fact that they were overwhelmed with private landowners saying that they did not favor this at all. And it was the fact that there was no clear objective at all on the part of the Department of the Interior, and it just seemed to be what most of the private landowners felt was maybe potentially a federal land grab. And so without any kind of clarification of what the objective was, any kind of clarification about the language, I think it was in our interest to make sure that we advocated stopping this program, get a better assessment of what they're trying to accomplish before they come at it again. And if they want to try to do something like this again, I would suggest that they do it in the light of day and make sure that everybody knows what's going on, what their objective is. And but at this point, I think what we've seen now is just a further sort of separation between the federal government and regular Americans who have developed a distrust for the federal government. And you've seen several federal agencies in the limelight lately that have all they're doing is proliferating that distrust and cynicism on the part of American people.
One other House vote that's making the headlines, a largely party-line vote, passed a measure in the House that delays both the employer mandate and the individual mandate parts of the federal health care law. The president had already put off the employer mandate, and the Senate, we know, has been typically supportive of the health care law. So what does this vote accomplish?
Well, I think it tells the American people that we're on their side. And I tell you why. You know, that for the president to come out and say, well, we're gonna delay the employer mandate, but we're going to allow the rest of this to go on, that's patently unfair, number one. Number two, I don't know that he even has the authority to do that. What concerns most Americans, I think, at this point is whether or not the administration can and should pick and choose what laws that they enforce and what laws that they don't. I like this law, so I'm going to go forward with it. I don't like this law, so I'm not. So, you know, the president was instrumental, as the name implies, Obamacare. He was instrumental in implementing this health care law. And then, for whatever reason, he has chosen to selectively apply the law. And again, we talk just like I talked about with the Blue Ways project, so much ambiguity and subjectivity in this approach that it has the American people concerned, upset, outraged in many cases. And so, look, if we're going to provide some relief to our employers, and I think we should, then we should at the same time consider those people that they employ. So the American worker needs a break. American families need a break. And if we're going to provide that break to one group of people, we ought to take that same approach and apply fairly to everybody and say, look, the program's not working, and we need to back up, regroup, reevaluate, and take a different approach. And if that means we delay it for a year or two or three, you know, I prefer permanent delay But at the very least, if we're going to delay it for one group, we should take the same approach and be fair to everybody. And this health care law affects all of us.
What about the reports that are coming out from some states already that say that their state exchanges are resulting in significantly lower premiums?
Well, you know, I can't comment on what's taking place state to state, but I can comment on the fact that we've seen all kinds of negative effects as a result, a direct result of Obamacare, the implementation, the costs associated with it, and I can point to, you know, obviously the Baptist Health layoffs that have taken place, and the Arkansas Hospital Association CEO Bo Ryle said these layoffs are coming as a direct effect of Obamacare law. So what we're also seeing is 74% of American small businesses report that they plan to either cut their hours or shed jobs as a result of the law. So that's the reason I supported the delay, so we can get a handle on what we need to do going forward. And we're going to continue to look for opportunities to delay and or repeal this law, because it's just bad policy all the way around. So, and again, my heart goes out to these folks that are affected by the layoffs at Baptist Health. But again, we're seeing the evidence more and more that the Obamacare law is having an adverse effect on our economy. Sure. And so now we're seeing that play out here at home in Arkansas.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you for your time today, Congressman.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Congressman Rick Crawford represents Arkansas's 1st Congressional District in the U.S. House. You're listening to Morning Edition.